Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are on this Friday afternoon. Thanks very much, everyone, for tuning in to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll talk to Andrea Haynes, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation, in just a minute or so. In the second half hour, venture capitalist comes by, Joe Blair. He's vice president of Obvious Ventures. He had an interesting essay that I read, was just reading this morning, about tech and innovation and how it's really lagged in the construction industry. And he's got some ideas about how to change that. And then we'll go to Iceland to wrap the show up. Andrea, welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Steve. Good to see you.
So there's a Taste of Iceland in town next week.
Oh, really?
A tourism event. So I took a group to Iceland. I've got a group, another travel group going to Iceland next month. So it's red hot. And it's interesting because people want to go there, but the sort of travel infrastructure, in my experience anyway, hasn't kept up with demand. So it's tough to find hotel rooms and things like that.
It's kind of been driven by flights, right? There have been low-price flights there, and it's become a very trendy destination.
Yeah, I think that's the way I first heard of it. But it's really cool. Well, we'll talk about Iceland later. But it's not just the nature of it, but it's the way they harness the nature to heat their homes and all of that. Okay. Tim Cook was in town earlier this week. We've talked quite a bit about it on the show, but you had sort of a inside view of something else with Cook and MSNBC?
Yeah, there was a day two of the whole Apple announcement situation with Tim Cook in town. Chris Hayes of MSNBC and Kara Swisher of Recode hosted a conversation with Tim Cook that got deeper into some of the issues impacting Apple. So they're going to be airing that on MSNBC in about a week. But it was interesting. It was at Lane Tech, kind of in the gym, you know, set up to do this big MSNBC show.
Right.
So it was interesting. There's a lot, you know, it's all like so complicated, right? Because like Apple is generally considered a good citizen in many ways, but they've also done things with their taxes, you know, things to avoid taxes, things that they're now trying to be better at. There's a lot of complex issues. So it's pretty interesting.
We'll look for that. In Blue Sky this week, there's a piece about retailers creating their own brands. It's not really a generic brand. It's a house brand, I guess, something like that.
Yeah, it's kind of the online version of what we're familiar with as generic brands or house brands. Well, Costco's Kirkland brand is in a lot of people's houses.
I have to tell you something. You know, T-shirts, I hate buying T-shirts, and I know that Kirkland, they work for me. And I was between Costco runs. I actually found online where I could order. So I've become brand loyal to Kirkland.
Interesting.
I was shocked to read in the story that they made $129 billion in annual sales, and the Kirkland brand was like a quarter of that.
Yeah, it's people took to that one very well, right? Like people are fine with the coffee, the nuts, or some things they mention as being very popular.
And so other stores do that, obviously. But it's moving its way online, or what's the gist there?
Yeah, so now some new online brands are coming to the fore. There's one called Prince and Spring, which is from Boxed.com, where they do their own, you know, it's kind of their own brand, but it's called Prince and Spring. Jet.com has Uniquely J, letter J, and Amazon, you know, has Amazon Basics, which has been around for a little while, and they have one called Wickedly Prime. So there's some new names coming to the fore that are these sort of, you know, identified with their retailer.
And the idea is that people will develop loyalty to that, or that they'll go to the site and get bargains with their own brand. I mean,
yeah, I think it's a little bit of a loyalty thing. I think one thing the story mentions is that millennials actually don't want to use the products they were familiar with at home.
I love that, yeah.
Which is kind of funny for me. I feel like you grew up in Tide and Cascade and you buy Tide and Cascade, but you know, millennials are wanting different brands. And some of these they are developing with other features to them, like they might be organic, they might be lower priced. So they're adding on, you know, little sales points like that.
So isn't it kind of a little secret that the people who make Tide and whatever all the branded names are also making these house brands?
Yeah, it's funny too. It's also, again, it's funny to read it because they're really dancing around, you know, they typically won't say, like, you know, they won't say, you know, Amazon will not say who's making their diapers, right? Procter & Gamble won't say whose diapers it's making. Like, nobody will quite admit to who's making these products.
Because they don't want you to buy the Kirkland version, but they want to charge you the Huggies version.
Exactly. They don't, you know, the brands don't want to undercut their own,
right,
you know, their own name. And then similarly, the stores want their brand to feel like it has its own identity. They don't want it to be over-identified with the brand name maker.
All this fighting over Kleenex.
Yes.
Okay, so there's that. Oh, there's another story about, and I think I understand this one, but a move toward apps, phone apps that people will use to videotape or film themselves taking their medicine. And it seems to me like this could, I guess this is in situations where medicine is required by law, or I mean, how does this work?
Yeah, so one of the big problems with prescriptions is that people don't take them accurately. You know, they don't take them long enough, or they don't take them consistently enough for them to work. Now, in a way, that might be your own problem if right. you don't manage your own medicine. But there are things like tuberculosis is one, you know, things where there's a long treatment required. And if it is not fully and properly treated, it gets worse. You get worse strains of it. So there's like a public health implication.
And TB, right. You can put others at risk.
Yes. If people aren't doing it right, they're putting others at risk. So this is one way that these might play into it. Another way might be that your employer or your insurance company just wants to know, if I'm paying for this money, you know, as your insurer,
wow.
I want to make sure you're taking it.
I don't like that.
So then you get into some of those privacy type issues that we always talk about. But the way this works is you would potentially take your phone and you would literally photograph, you know, yourself taking the pills, show your empty mouth in a selfie to show that you took
the
pill.
It's like you're 3 years old.
And, you know, yeah, it's kind of like you're on probation or something, right? Like you're being monitored for like how you take it. But it seems to have some promise. There's one monitoring app called eMocha. There's some places where that's already being used. It's being used in treating like opioid addiction, that kind of thing.
Which
so there's
makes,
some interesting applications.
And there's some real logic there, right? I mean, people need, a lot of times they need encouragement. They need a way forward. And
yeah, just some accountability.
Reporting, you know, in might be a way to do that.
Exactly.
But I don't like the idea that if your insurance company is paying for your medicine, that you have to prove you're taking it. That's
yeah,
kind of scary.
Yeah, creepy fast. You know, but one, I'm always kind of interested in elder care because so many people my age are taking care of older people.
Right.
And like one, you know, startups that are selling these apps say that's one also way you could use it. If you literally want to make sure mom's taking her medication, you can make her send you, you know, send you a selfie of her doing it.
I'm interested in elder care too, because I'm about ready to be cared for.
Because you're ready to need some.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
I hear you.
All right. Andrea Haines, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation, also the content editor for Red Eye. What's in Red Eye this weekend?
So Red Eye's all about baseball. So all the baseball stuff.
It is.
Where to eat, where to go, how to cheer on your teams, and what to expect from them this
Chicago's
year.
Chicago's undefeated this year. You know that, don't you?
Love that.
Did you know that? You didn't even know that, did you?
I kind of did, because it's been half a day, right?
Yeah, it's been less than 24 hours. Thanks. We'll see you again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is 12:23. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll talk Iceland tourism a little bit later in the show. And also I'll talk to a venture capitalist about why technology has been so slow in the construction field. But right now, Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, is in the studio. Welcome back, Tom.
Hello, my friend.
I don't know if you saw earlier, but Sister Jean had her...
Love Sister Jean.
She had her Final Four news conference. I'm not
kidding
you.
No, I did not see the press
conference. She just had a news conference about an hour ago, and it was packed, standing room only. She's making all kinds of jokes. You know, she's up there throwing out the one-liners. And, you know, Bennett Wicknight, the producer of the show, went to Loyola, and he said, this is who she's been there. This isn't like
so he knew of her before.
Yeah, and he said, you know, people walk around campus, and they're like, hey, Sister Jean, Sister Jean. And, you know, he's been out for several years.
Yeah.
So I like that. So there's some authenticity to it.
Totally.
But you argue that every company should find their Sister Jean.
Yeah, I think we live in this world where when you get older, people always want to talk about age discrimination. Right? In the workplace. Now, she's not, I don't know what her compensation, you know, I don't know anything about the nuances.
None.
But the fact.
No, I mean, she's a nun.
Yeah. Go ahead. U-O-E, it's vowels. And so I think we always talk about that. But the fact of the matter is young people love old people who have energy and charisma and personality and are engaged in the things that young people like.
That's interesting. So the younger people feed off the older people. And
don't you?
I
mean,
yeah.
Listen, I'm seeing it on TV. And here's a woman wearing high tops and dressed up in the gear. And she's got the hat on backwards. And she's part of the fun. And when you get older and you engage in the fun, you know, oh, I don't want to be laughed at. No one's laughing at Sister Jean. They're laughing with
Absolutely.
Sister Jean.
Okay, but if you're in the workplace, then if you're an older worker, you don't want to make your older worker a mascot either.
No, well, you're right.
Right?
Right?
I mean,
any more than you want to make fun of a young person, right? You don't want to make fun of anybody. But what I did was I looked at three things that were attractive about Sister Jean in the role, this role of the elder stateswoman, if you will, right? She lifts people up. She's motivational to people. If this 98-year-old woman can be this excited about us, why can't everybody
right.
be? Right? Forgetting the fact that they only sold out one game all season, which is a whole nother conversation, right? Secondly, she's loyal. And this isn't about, oh, well, she's a nun and it's a Jesuit school. I think there's a lot of nuns and priests who weren't following Loyola all
Absolutely,
this time.
Absolutely, right.
She cared about it. She likes the game. Right? She's passionate. And then lastly, she's hardworking. She's let me tell you, I've got a dad who's 79. I don't know if he's getting on the plane to go to all these games.
You know, there's something to be said for that, too, because it looks like she's having the time. I mean, she said, I think, in the news conference, it's been the most fun she's had in her life.
I'm sure.
It's got to be draining on her, too.
I think it's exhausting, but you know what? It's one of those things where, I don't want to say anything on the radio and then it actually happens, but if they win the championship and she passes away, I don't think she'd want it any other way.
Okay, thanks for listening, everyone. Right. The radio station just closed.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like she's her energy is being used for something she's passionate about, and these kids coming over to her and giving her high fives, and her being on the court, and it's so great.
It is the stuff of movies. I mean, it's the sort of character, you know, because you know the country is really watching her.
Absolutely.
So, but I would imagine Sister Jean's must sort of organically happen, right? You can't go out and
Don't go out and find that. But there are, you know, I've seen a lot of companies, you know, mine included, where they hire a lot of millennials, and there's a couple people that are 20, 30 years older, and there's those that are viewed as, you know, we need the elder statesperson or the gray hair.
Right.
No, you need somebody who's got experience who can relate. Relatability is the key. You know, I remember my grandmother before she passed, she was in her mid-80s, and she'd talk about Howard Stern and Saturday Night Live all the time. She'd watch the skits and want to talk about it and be a little bit crude with a profanity.
Right.
It made you want to be around her. And there's different types of people.
So I think maybe you're talking to not the millennials or the CEOs, but to those of us who are getting older in the workplace, too.
Yeah.
How to find a spot, fit in. Because we're going to talk construction in the next half hour. One of the problems in the construction industry is the carpenters are old.
Yes.
And they're not taking on new things. Right? So the older people...
Is this like an Easter correlation that Jesus was a carpenter?
No, where it's we going? Not. But thank you. You've killed an American icon and...
I've killed nobody.
But as you're getting older in the workplace, too, you can sit there and consider yourself Correct. The one with all the answers, or you can have a little fun as well.
I think the biggest problem when you get older and age in the workforce, whether it's basketball, a Jesuit school, or in the workplace,
right.
is that people want to point the finger and blame the younger generation. Make yourself attractive to young people by having personality be engaging. And the truth of the matter is, the curmudgeons at 30 end up being the curmudgeons at 98. My feeling is when Sister Jean was 38,
she was
probably a fun person then, too.
That is Tom Gimbel. The CEO of LaSalle Network. Thanks for coming by.
Hey, happy Easter to you.
Have a great weekend.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And it's 12:36 as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio on this Friday afternoon. A little bit of sun on Michigan Avenue, so we've got that. We're going to talk Iceland a little bit later in the half hour. There's a Taste of Iceland event in Chicago next week. Actually, I think it's a four-day sort of thing where the Iceland tourism folks will come in and spend their time here trying to get you to go there. But before that, let's talk construction and innovation. Joe Blair is a VP at Obvious Ventures, and he's got some ideas about technology when it comes to putting buildings together. Joe, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
And I want to start. I was on your website checking out just Obvious Ventures, what you guys do, and it looks like you are pretty mission-driven. So tell me about Obvious Ventures and what that's all about.
Absolutely. So Obvious Ventures, we're a mostly early-stage venture capital firm based here in Silicon Valley. And we invest in what we call world-positive companies, and that means disruptive technology companies going after some of the world's biggest problems. And we believe in this contrarian viewpoint that companies that are built around purpose actually have the ability to create more profits, earn more profits, both as companies and then by proxy for venture capital investors who invest in those companies. So we are big believers in that philosophy.
I was going to ask you that. So are you making less money because of this philosophy or making more?
So the thesis is that we are and will continue to make more. So most firms that call themselves impact firms. We don't. We don't call ourselves an impact firm because, as you say, impact kind of implies you're willing to take some sort of financial concessions to have some sort of other sort of bottom line benefit.
Sure.
We think that is a false trade-off, and we take the contrarian viewpoint to that. Profit and purpose create this flywheel effect that has the capability of reimagining entire industries and reimagining capitalism.
All right, so then let me ask you this way. Have you passed on something that could have earned you a nice return, but because it didn't fit with your philosophy, you just didn't go?
Absolutely. We pass on companies all the time if we don't believe that they have a world-positive mission. And hard to know because it's a long cycle it's a long feedback cycle to figure out if you missed out on the next Facebook or what have you. But we feel very confident in our investment thesis, and we're sticking with it. And so far, it's working out phenomenally well.
Let's talk construction because I saw this essay that you wrote about how we're still building buildings in many ways the way we were 75 years ago, but it's more and more expensive to build those buildings. It's as if it's an area where the great revolution in innovation hasn't arrived, or the great technological revolution. It's not at the building site yet.
It's actually really true, exactly what you're saying. Construction is actually one of the least digitized industries in the world. And digitization of an industry is easy when the work is non-physical and repetitive. And construction, just so happens, is highly non-physical and highly physical and non-repetitive. And to complicate things even further, if you compare it to a kind of sister industry like manufacturing, all of the work is bespoke, essentially. So every project is different. So imagine if you design an iPhone, you design it beautifully, and then you set the design and you manufacture millions of that same design. For construction, every single one is different, which adds an order of magnitude more complexity. And then add on to that, during the construction process, the specs change, whether due to materials availability or mistakes that happen or changes from the requirements. So imagine you're manufacturing a product like an iPhone, and in the middle of manufacturing that product, the customer decides they want a different shape screen or whatnot.
Right.
It adds even another layer of complexity. So
is it tough to?
These are some of the reasons.
Well, I'm wondering too if the trades have something to do with it. You know, I mean, a junior carpenter is learning from a senior carpenter, and a senior carpenter might not be in a position to innovate or to try new things.
Yep. Well, it is a conservative culture, and you also have an industry where, like you said, some of these tradespeople are in this doing the same work they've done.
And it's not a negative thing.
Years.
I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm hard pressed to try something new. I mean, it's just kind of a natural ordeal.
Absolutely. And think about it this way. Oftentimes, innovation, when it's you try to drive it through an organization, the average worker at the end of the day has to think about, well, how is this benefiting me? And oftentimes, there are misaligned incentives, and adopting some sort of innovation might not be in line with the incentives of the everyday worker. So I think that's another problem.
Did you just describe in a situation that is not solvable? I mean, building techniques not innovate? Are we kind of stuck with where we are, or how do we change?
It's certainly solvable, but just in different ways. You can't apply the same techniques or the same solutions that have worked in other industries directly and apply them. So there are, at Obvious Ventures, we believe there are three opportunities for the next wave of construction tech startups. The first theme is actually bringing manufacturing techniques to construction. So the technique specifically I'm thinking about is the technique of subassemblies. So most manufacturing plants you go to, there's subassemblies, and they're put together on an assembly, on a final assembly line.
You talked about you talked about a situation in China where they erected a building, a skyscraper, essentially in 19 days.
Right. We're talking about prefabricated construction processes. And there was this 57-story skyscraper that was built in 19 days, a project that would take conventional construction techniques like over a year or multiple years to complete. And he, right here in the United States, there's a company that we've invested in called Plant Prefab, which is doing the same thing for the residential markets, for both single-family homes as well as multi-residential properties, with exceedingly positive results. And by doing that, by bringing a lot of that labor into the manufacturing environment, you're reducing your kind of the variability associated with weather as well as labor availability, and you're also able to complete projects at a fraction of the time. So we believe in this theme wholeheartedly.
All right, so
another theme. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say another theme that we believe in is what we call superhumanizing the construction worker. So bear in mind, a lot of these trades, it's difficult and dangerous work. Workers' compensation insurance is often the second biggest line item beyond paying for the labor itself. So we believe that collaboration between human workers and intelligent machines can create a safer work environment while also dramatically increasing productivity. And the idea is transitioning the role of the traditional role of the construction worker into a role of a construction robot trainer slash operator, which means a livelihood for people that's less physically demanding, safer, and potentially higher paying. And so this gets back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of aligning incentives for everyone up and down the business.
All right, so we've got just 30 seconds left. So in that time, let's get back to where we started, in that you invest in companies with a positive worldview. How does bringing innovation to the construction industry, the construction world, improve our world?
Sure. I mean, just to bring it to the everyday person, the byproduct of construction costs increasing means that the cost of an everyday person and being able to afford their rent has decreased. The amount of money people are paying to rent has increased at a faster rate than their income growth. So, I mean, living and sleeping and having a place to live is one of the lower rungs of the Maslow's hierarchy. So bringing cheaper, more sustainable construction practices to the industry means more affordable and more flexible housing opportunities for the everyday person.
That's
why it's important to us.
Joe Blair, Vice President, Obvious Ventures. Great to talk to you. Hope we can do it again, Joe.
All right. I enjoyed it. Thanks very much.
Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute. Sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. The Polsky Center is at it again, cranking out startups that are changing the way we all look at our day-to-day. One of the latest that has just secured $750,000 is Surratt Therapeutics. They're helping to combat migraines with a nasal spray. Believe it or not, their chief scientific officer said it's a very simple solution to a complex problem. I guess we can say that sometimes overthinking things can be the biggest hurdle to solving an issue. And apparently, the simple solution to update O'Hare is just to borrow $4 billion. Yes, billion with a B. The $8.5 billion plan to expand O'Hare Airport has been approved by the City Council, adding up to 35 more passenger terminals, making Chicago an even bigger aviation hub for the U.S. One of the downfalls is that the plan wouldn't be completed until 2026. Patience is key. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are on Friday. Our number of the week this week is $184,220. Wall Street bonuses are the highest they've been since before the Great Recession. The average bonus last year, $184,220. By the way, the median household income in the U.S. in 2016, $59,000. All right, let's go to Iceland. Better thoughts. On a phone line now is Teitur Riddimann-Schut, who is a cultural ambassador from Iceland to the U.S. Teitur, how did I do with that name?
Yeah, it's pretty nice. It's pretty nice to represent my country and Iceland in Chicago in this Taste of Iceland event that's coming up now in Chicago.
You're coming here next week?
Yes, I'm coming here next week. It's an event that starts on the 5th of April, and it's going until the 8th of April.
So, Sander, I have a travel business, too, and I led a group myself to Iceland, a group of WGN listeners, last June. I've got another group from TS Financial going next month. They're going to go to your country. You're very popular. I work in group space, and I found that Iceland is so popular these days that it's kind of tough sometimes to find a spot to stay.
Yeah, it can be really tough, especially during the summers. The hotels are usually fully booked. There's a lot of tourists going around the country. But, you know, I think it's wonderful that so many people really want to visit us and see the countryside, see the culture that we have to offer, our food, our wine, and our drinks. It's just definitely amazing. I think it's amazing so many people are coming.
And it's important to you, too, isn't it? I mean, tell me about the value of tourism to Iceland.
The value of tourism has gotten so important nowadays, because usually back in the day it was only fish that Iceland got its revenue, but now the tourism is actually kind of getting bigger than the fishing, which is it's really, really good for the economy as well.
Yeah, I was reading
this. The economy is getting really, really strong
because of tourism, right? Not fishing so much anymore.
Well, we are fishing, of course. It's a really big part of our economy. But the tourism is actually just, you know, so big now that it's actually just getting bigger, which is great. It's good for us. Definitely.
Yeah, you know what? It's great for us too, because it's a remarkable country. And you know, when I came back with were, you know, the stories about waterfalls and all of that. But I was more impressed with the way you've harnessed the steam, the way you're heating your homes and things like that. And I was reading, actually, there was a study out of the University of Kansas. This professor went to Iceland and tried to figure out why it is that you all seem to be more innovative than the rest of the world. And they just talked about this sort of notion of independence that is there, and the fact that, you know, so many people do things on their own rather than as a collective, that it's really fed that. I mean, what do you think it leads to such innovation in Iceland?
Well, I can't say I know. I know we use geothermal energy to power our houses, which is a really green energy, geothermal energy to do a lot of things. I don't know. Maybe it's the air that is enabling us to do such great things. Well, I can't say for sure, but you know, that's just the way it is, I guess.
What is the and what's your specialty? I read that you're a specialty bartender, or what's that about?
Yeah, so I am a bartender. I work as a bar manager for one of the newly opened places here downtown Reykjavik in Iceland, called Pablo Disco Bar. You know, and I do this for a living. I'm traveling on behalf of Iceland, naturally, and the Icelandic government to do some work. For example, in Chicago, and then we're doing a few other cities after the summer.
Did you say the hotel is named Pablo Disco Bar?
It's not a hotel; it's a bar.
Oh, okay, okay.
The bar is named Pablo Disco Bar.
I like that. That's very good.
Thank you very much. We put emphasis on fun times and cocktails.
Well,
a lot of cocktails and good times.
I certainly enjoyed my time in Iceland last year. I can't wait to go back. If people want to find out more information. Now, so what I came back with stories of having whale for dinner one night and then having puffin as an appetizer. That's the sort of stuff I came back with. But if people want to find out more about A Taste of Iceland, where do they go?
So we're going to have our menu at the Baptiste and Ball in Chicago. So there's going to be an Icelandic menu presented by George, which is our chef. And then my cocktail menu is going to be presented there as well. And then we're going to have a cocktail class where I'm going to present my cocktails, my menu, with the Icelandic spirits, Reyka Vodka and Brennivín. At the Dawson as well. I think that's going to be on the 3rd of April.
Tater Ritterman Schutt, thanks very much for joining us today. I hope I can see you next week when you're here.
Thank you very much. Hope to see you too, man.